this is James Dillon, and I'm your host. Welcome to the show. We've got another great show. We've got a Freedom Technology Show and a wonderful weekend workshop coming up here October 4th and 5th, 2014 at Trout Lake, Washington. And for more of that information, we'll give you the contact information several times in the show. If you want to find out more about this event, go to eseduReservations@gmail.com and request an invite. And so I wanted to talk about the people that are doing this workshop, the great workshop. We've got Neil Kramer, who's going to be one of the presenters. We've got Nate Walton. I'll give you Nate's background. He's a massage therapist and healing arts. He's an independent researcher, self-study. He's collaborated with us here at the ranch since 2009 for the last 4 years, and his partner, Janet, have been full-time stewards at the ranch. Along the way, he's worn many hats and assists the ranch in several capacities, including working with the land, organizing reservations, as well as the creation of private reservations work address site. He's an event organizer, facilitator in the house, in-house yak whisperer, researcher, and administrator for the ranch. During the past few years, his work at the ranch has focused on the practical application of the understanding of rights and duties and the sacred path of self-determination. And we also got Spencer coming on, Spencer Barkley. He has spent several years independently studying law, contract, linguistics, definitions, orthography, commercial redemption, administrative process, mortgages, foreclosures, due process, and many other threads of the info regarding sovereignty. He has come into his own conclusions about the nature of conflict and how to resolve and achieve remedy not only through action but also through perception. So without any further ado, I want to bring Nate and Spence on the show. Are you guys with us?
Hey, James, we're right here.
Great. I noticed you guys went on your usual walk this morning. You know, I'm probably figuring out what you're going to say on the show and a few other things. So I'm not sure exactly where you wanted to go or start out with this, so I'll just turn it over to you and let you go from there and maybe bring up some questions along the way.
Cool. Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for having us on the show. And, you know, we've been around, I guess maybe we've been on the show a couple times in the past. This season we've had a really awesome season here at the ranch and a pretty diverse, schedule of different private events. And it's been really fun to create that. Earlier in the season, we had Lauren Dr. Dream and Michael Tellinger was just here. And, you know, we just had your ambassador's class. We got another one of those coming up. And then one of the other things that we had created that's on the schedule is an event that Spencer and I and our buddy Neil Kramer are all collaborating on, and that's the Freedom Divinity Empire. And it's a real cool opportunity for people to come and get together and jam on some of the topics that Spencer and I have delved into, and then also have the chance to hang with Kramer. I'm sure he's going to be bringing a real interesting new slice of the pie every time he comes around. He's got something new to present. And so we're going to be looking at some of the mechanisms of the control system that they use to harvest our consent and essentially get us to lie down or consent to our own slavery and our own bondage in different ways. But Spence and I, through research and through actually experience and practically applying and doing some of the inner work and reflecting, we've noticed various patterns emerge towards peaceful ways that we can use these the tools that the system may use against us to empower ourselves, actually, and to assist us in our path of seeking more freedom and more self-determination and just more holistic and empowered way of life. So like I said, you know, we're real excited to get to do this event and do it in such an awesome setting as the ranch. You know, I know that there's all sorts of different types of conferences for all sorts of different types of info and alternative info. Sometimes some of the bigger conferences might, you know, have to be held at like a Marriott or some hotel or something. And I've gone to conferences like that in the past and, you know, had them be awesome. But doing an event at the ranch has something extra special involved in that we, you know, we have this just beautiful natural surroundings that we get to do it in. and be close to nature, you know, and then all the extra added pluses of being able to have the Skywatch and be in, you know, a high intensity, world renowned UFO and another energetic hotspot. So we're super looking forward to that. It's also in the beginning of October. We'll be having our fires going back then, probably right on the cusp of the ending time when camping is still doable. So, yeah, just really excited to have the opportunity to do this event here.
Great. Could you cover some of the some of the avenues that you're going to be talking about during the event? It's like, I know you might be talking about mortgages. You might be talking about just all kinds of things, getting out of all kinds of struggles that the powers that were seem to be laying on people. It seems to get heavier and heavier lately, and that actually is pushing people to become more and more sovereign and becoming more educated and how to deal with maintaining our freedom.
Vince, you got something to say on that? Yeah, you know, I don't know necessarily that I'm going to be speaking on anything so specific and down into it as those elements of mortgages and exact tools that people are going to be using. It's probably going to be a lot higher view of the components of the civil system. How is it built? What are they? What is, as an example, what is a state? What is a government? Things like this, and the tools that they use, generally speaking, it's not going to be down into such a micro specific aspect as licenses and mortgages, but it's going to be that, you know, 200-mile view of how the system, the civil system, works, whether it's the United States or France or Italy or the Japan. It's all the same thing, like a fractal.
Yeah.
And so I'm gonna pull it back and offer a lot bigger view of how those control systems operate and function.
Mm-hmm. Kind of how we did get enslaved and how we have given away our power and acquiesced to a lot of these systems that were put in place for the very reason of doing that, which are actually contrary to universal law, but you know, actually they fit right into draconian law.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of that is, one of the rules is manner and agreement overrule law. So if people are sovereign, they can waive their rights, and that's one of the tools that the system uses, is they get us to override and rubber stamp those kinds of that kind of force, so that the force that they're using against us is what we gave them in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so part of what we're going to talk about is that paradigm shift, to see that it's not that they're not using universal law, it's that the people aren't. You know,
yeah.
they want to come to the table without a useful set of tools and then expect things to turn out the way they want. And you can't have both. And so probably what I'm going to be emphasizing a lot is there needs to be a real paradigm shift in how we look to see what's going on here and what we can do to empower ourselves and to step forward if we want to, or if we have a sufficient mindset to do that. You know, if someone's too buried in a victim mentality that what other people are doing to them, they probably will never be able to wield the tools. And
yeah.
So,
you have to have a
little
certain
bit of that
mindset. Yeah, you have to have a certain mindset that, you know, you are a free person and you have God-given rights, and that you have to have the courage to say, okay, now I have to figure out how I can stand in my own divinity and stand in those rights, and how can I avoid the programs that you're talking about, all the different ways that they can totally usurp our rights and get us to agree to giving up those rights.
Yeah, you got it. And that's also what needs to be said, is that's the start of the journey. You can't just declare, I'm sovereign, I'm my own being, and then have everything unfold. That's just the start to be able to see that there are possibilities. It's not the end of the journey. It's just the start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the base, foundation. Yeah, and then you got to get a lot of tools under your belt because you will be tested.
Yep. Yeah, the good news is it's all just simple, fundamental stuff that makes sense. The hard part is getting rid of the ideas that people already have in their mind.
Mm. Well, yeah.
What do you mean by that, Spencer? Okay. Like the example of ideas that people have in their mind. Sometimes we talk about that and people just being front-loaded, mm-hmm. right? Mm. I mean, I feel like I see there's a lot of this. We might think that we know how things work, or because of our already deep woundedness of starting to learn about the slavery mechanisms that are in place on this planet, or that do affect us. Like it's a real natural part of our learning unfoldment. That as we start to learn about some of this stuff that's binding us, people get angry. People get frustrated, and rightfully so. But it might not necessarily serve us so well if we stay in that space, if we don't grow and evolve past it, and if we don't realize our own power, realize this myriad of potential solutions that are there for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's a lot of tools. I know in our undergoing, with the legal system here and just keeping the ranch alive and going, I had to do a crash course, and I know I'm still touching the tip of the iceberg, but it is a lot of work, and it is, you have to totally rethink everything and be very careful on what you say and what you do, and everything has a meaning to it, and it gets pretty intricate. But I think, with some study and just keeping after it a while, eventually, we can learn to play the game, on even ground.
Mm-hmm. One concept that comes to mind that would tie together both of what you just said, Nate mentioned something about having our minds so front-loaded that most people listen, and what they really are doing is waiting to speak with whatever they have their mind front-loaded with, or they don't rebuild in their mind the picture that is trying to be presented to them today. And I had someone tell me today that I was speaking in riddles. And so where is the failure to communicate? Is it a lack of understanding of what is said? Or is it what I was saying that I was actually avoiding trying to pass along and impart information? And so there's...
And in your mind, your intention was to pass along information. Uh-huh. I didn't intend to be speaking in riddles.
Right. And so what I have found is that people's listening skills are so incredibly poor, and the inability to have a still mind and to ponder and reflect on ideas that they have, and to have some kind of emotional vulnerability to be prepared to say to themselves, I was wrong.
Or, I don't know.
Yeah, or I don't know. People always have to know. And I've asked people questions about, as I've told them something, I'll go back in time a little bit in that conversation and say, do you know what I mean by this thing that I just said? And very rarely will someone say, no, I don't know. They'll always offer, and it manifests as their best guess. And generally, it's completely wrong. That aspect in someone's mind to say, God, I don't know, I really don't have knowledge from research, is such a habit mm-hmm. that has been ingrained in them to just offer their best guess that they don't even know that's what they're doing. And so there's that skill of listening, that ability to be vulnerable and not knowing seems to be some extraordinary qualities that sometimes I forget. I forget that that's not the case.
It seems like maybe that one level that's a vulnerability to be in the state of admitting, okay, I don't know, or I was wrong. But really, there's a flip side to that, that can be an enormous asset. It can be an enormous tool.
The only way to learn. You have to know it to be fixed.
painting the wall. So it's a paint? Is that where you're going with this?
You miss a spot, and if you were painting the side of a wall, and you completed the project, and you put the paintbrush away, and then you stood back 15 feet in order to observe your work, and you noticed there were spots that you missed. There are things that you didn't see at the time, but we can see when we look back over again. That's not something that people would like be embarrassed about or try to hide. You just pull the paintbrush out and fix it again. So that's the kind of analogy that I have in my mind of, like, this is, if you're wrong about something, it's that big of a deal. It's a non-issue. But people evade and avoid being wrong like their life depends on it. And if that is a factor going into learning this stuff,
it's the same thing in counseling. You know, when you're working with people, one of the biggest pitfalls is the need to be right, and versus sitting back and go, well, wait a second, could I possibly not be seeing this? You know, seeing everything that is happening here, or is there more to the story? Is there a bigger picture going on here? And I noticed that it's like, are afraid of being, you know, there's a need to be right, and then there's afraid of being wrong. I guess both of those, but they definitely become a pitfall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see the distinction there between the two of those ideas.
Yeah, I guess it depends on your nature. You know, if you're a victim, you know, you're afraid of being wrong, you know, and you do whatever you think you're supposed to do. And if you're just really a little bit arrogant or something, or you're gonna just give an answer and act like it is the answer versus, you know, just sitting and listening and sitting with it for a minute.
Yep. And so another way to say a lot of this, or to come at it from a different direction, is that these concepts are not just, they're not merely adding data points to what you already know. It's, we can't just add more knowledge. There has to be some fundamental readjustments in thinking sometimes.
And readjustments in the way that we act and that we carry ourselves and the actions that we do.
It's kind of a testimony that the fluoride is working, you know, with some of these things. But, you know, it's so interesting that when, you know, I used to be in commercial real estate a long time ago, and I had to know commercial law and things like that. And, you know, I had to keep every I dotted, and people were always trying to take advantage of you and pull fast ones and things like that. And then after the near-death experience, that became another world, and I was so far away from that reality and that world. It's like having to be reborn again into a whole new world again, and having to learn the lingo and you know, it's similar but different at the same time. But it is kind of interesting. I know a lot of people just don't want to go there because the energies and what's happening, you know, in the system and things like that. But, you know, right now with the way things are unfolding, it's a necessity. You know, we are going to have to start really shoring up our, you know, our knowledge concerning our rights and how we can maintain those rights.
Yeah, you know, there's something that I think is an even bigger influence than fluoride, although I wouldn't argue it. My point is what the public school system has done by suggestion. It doesn't express this directly. It is, you come in, sit down, and you do not have to think and question and ponder and reflect out into the future. All you have to do is sit there, and someone will provide data to you. And so when you hit the end of the tracks, whether that's the 12th grade, senior year in high school, or that mechanism continues on out through college, once you hit the real world, there is an expectation that has been hardwired since you were a little kid to turn your mind off, don't ponder, don't reflect, do not provide your own discernment. Just sit back and add data points, and someone else will provide that to you. You don't have to go out and get it. You do not have to be the general contractor. You can sit back as a recipient, and someone else owes it to you to teach you. And so that momentum once people hit adulthood, it is extremely difficult to reevaluate and to actually change those behaviors and patterns. And that's something that the public school system establishes and television reinforces. That internal pondering and reflecting and making things your own truth is so difficult, if that's what your expectation is in the first place.
Spence, can we talk a little bit more about this concept that you just are bringing up about the general contractor, like the general contractor of our own life, the general contractor of the pursuit of truth, mm-hmm. of the pursuit of freedom? What does that mean if we are going to be the general contractor of our life and of our pursuit of truth? How does our interaction with other teachers or other people that we might be getting information? We do need to get information. We do need to bring in subcontractors from time to time for things that we may not have all the expertise to do.
Being the general contractor is you're the one that officially gives the stamp of approval for the information that comes in. And so if someone's providing information to you, you're looking for someone to be a teacher or a guide, we would have to, first of all, start out with that idea of, is this teacher or guide absolutely perfect? So if they're not, that means somewhere along the line there's going to be some good faith fallibility here, and we may be able to correct those minor data points from our own thinking and reasoning. So, I mean, I'm being ridiculous with that aspect of, are they perfect? No. We can eliminate that right out of hand. And so that leaves us to be the one responsible for ultimately deciding, is the information that we're hearing correct or not? And it comes down to, you know, we've had experiences where we've had, you and I personally directly have had firsthand experience with two different people telling us conflicting information, and those could be replaced with a couple of different guides. One individual is telling us a story that is profoundly different than the other side. And we got down to the truth by asking questions on each of them. And sometimes we don't even know where we're going, but we just ask them, hey, well, where were you at this time? What were you doing? What was going on? Why did you do that? And by asking questions, whether it's directly to the person or to ourselves about the information that's hearing, we can sift through. You know, it's one way to look at it in a technical point of view is cross-examination. But we didn't have such a tight, concise attempt on it. We just asked questions about what we heard.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can see that this is like, it's not just a skill that is for people that are, oh, they're all mental, or just a skill for helping people deal with paperwork, or with commercial issues or legal issues. It's a skill for life, right? Because, I mean, look, there's people that show up to the ranch, you know, because they may have been led here by some poor information or
misled here,
right? Like this happens. It happens. Like there's a dude that came here recently. And, you know, just listening to some fourth dimensional entities that just told them, hey, don't worry about the money, go on up, you can stay forever, you know. And we, you know, in our minds, we think, okay, you know, had this person had their own skill set of cross-examining whatever they're hearing, the information that these beings are telling them, you know, maybe they would have been able to discern something different and a different outcome would have happened. I just see all different potential ways that this is, again, a skill for life.
It seems like, you know, the deal is like the, you know, I guess all these contracts were made, you know, in the spirit world, but we weren't a party to it. So, you know, we didn't get the, we didn't get the memo. We didn't even know we were being contracted with it or anything else until until the event happened, you know, and then you have to go, okay, well, wait a second, where is my name on the contract? Where did you have agreement, you know, here? And it seems like that's on a bigger scale that's happening quite a bit. There's all these contracts being made, and they're being made, you know, in other places and other rooms and then, you know, behind closed doors. And we're going, well, wait a second. Where's my name on there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's ways that if we find out that by some reason or another, by our own ignorance or because it was we weren't given enough information, we're involved in a contract that's fraudulent, that isn't in our highest and best good, that it, you know, that it is somehow having a negative impact on us. Well, you know, that happens. It's probably happened to everybody on this planet. But that's not the end of the world. One of the things we've learned along this way, hey, contracts are dynamic, flexible, and things are correctable. Yep. And so it just comes down to, do we have the will, do we have the desire, do we have the heart, do we have the intent to follow through and see those corrections through? And that just comes down to creating our life, right?
Yeah, who's creating your life? Somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But the public school system has got us set to, we defer to everybody else. We yield our ultimate will to what somebody else wants to do for us as a gift.
Yeah, it does.
So some people
it does. We were talking about it earlier.
That.
Yeah, it seems like the whole system here is now it's created to create neutered zombie robot consumers, and that seems to be the goal. And where people are just waiting to be told, you know, what to do. And they're not using discernment, and they're not using critical thinking or anything. But luckily, it seems like a lot of people are breaking out of that program and realizing that, you know, the people that have created this program do not have our highest and best good, you know, are not serving our interests, and they're very self-serving and taking us down, you know, a very enslaving road, you know, that ends up with pretty much no freedom and poverty and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, people have been making changes and coming forward on all sorts of different levels. You know, we've seen people, you know, from the UFO or exopolitical community, you know, different people who have stepped forward to bring out information. Some of them paid a deep price to do this, you know, thinking about people like Bill Cooper, mm-hmm. stuff back in the day, and Phil Schneider, and, you know, people like Bob Dean that we've met. You know, and this kind of brings me to thinking about, I know Spence has talked about in kind of some of the recent past, too, about the potential. Once some of the people who may be bound by certain oaths and may have served in certain agencies, to be able to correct those oaths and be able to come forward to be able to be able to tell and share information with the public about what they know.
Without consequences.
Can you jam on that for a little bit for us, Ben?
Yeah, I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, so many people have secrecy oaths or non-disclosure oaths within, let's just say, governmental agencies. Well, the key word there is agent. So why would an agent have an oath to not tell the principal anything, you know, the people? And so an oath, just like a contract, must be valid, and it must be in good faith, and it must be for a good reason. There's a multitude of standards that it has to have. But if those aren't expressed and challenged, an invalid oath still stands, like an invalid contract still stands. And so those are agreements that people have in some of these subcultures bound, and they're unbindable. The fundamental maxim, the principle is, if anybody's ever gone fishing and get a knot in their line, they'll know. As a thing is bound, so it is unbound. And so if it's your free will mm-hmm. that got you into that oath, it can be yours to get back out if it's not challenged. And you know, this thing probably takes several hours to to lay it all out, but I'm just sort of seeking an interest. Maybe there's something.
Well, I was wondering, there was one of the things I was wondering about is the oath, is that they took an oath, you know, to serve the Constitution, to serve the people, and you know, there's other oaths that they took that are totally contradictory to the oath of secrecy. You know, so it seems like you could say, well, wait a second, this oath is invalid because it's my duty to serve the people. It's my duty to serve, you know, freedom of speech. It's my duty to uphold these things. And so this is contrary to that, I don't know, you could call it a higher duty. I'm just wondering what your take would be on that.
Sure, absolutely. But it would be up to whoever it is that is faced with that dilemma to be able to sort things out and find out which one rises higher to the top. That's why all public servants are told that they are not bound to follow an unlawful order, and so is the military. But you get a thousand of those people and go interview them, and they won't know what an unlawful order is. They'll have no idea, because the only thing that they can distinguish is legal orders. They could only understand statutes. So my point is that this type of discernment and discretion there for folks to be able to see the difference is substantially non-existent. But it's coming out. People are starting to learn. People are starting to look into this stuff. But as a culture, you can kind of say generally people don't know. And that's kind of what keeps a system easy to control from the top down, is that
they go by what they're told. Again, like you're saying, they're told, okay, you signed this oath of secrecy. You can't talk about any of these things that are happening here, even though it might mean that people are being killed or people are being abused or, you know, even abducted and things like that. You know, they're going, wait a second, I'm here to protect the people, and there's some things going on that are very extremely harmful to the people that I'm supposed to be protecting. So how do I, you know, how do I do both at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's there to be had. You know, it's tough to break rank, though. But if someone has a mind for it, every once in a while, you know, the crack in the dam kind of thing, a little one gets bigger in terms of holding back this information. So
I know a lot of people over in Israel where there was a lot of people that were saying, you know, they left the army, they just walked out, and they started going public about what was going on there. They said they couldn't participate in it anymore, and you know, they got to speak for a little while, but now they're in the jail, you know, because they refused to go, you know, do another term or something. They said, no, I will not do another term, because they saw the truth of what was really happening there.
Yeah. Well, some of the mechanism that allows for that to happen at a high view, I'm going to talk about first weekend in October, way up high, super high view, what the mechanism looks like from a distance far enough back to see all the components.
Yeah, and you probably, hopefully you'll give us some pointers on how to break free of that mechanism.
You know, and I'm sure that one thing I want to point out is that even if there's some of the specific nuts and bolts are going really deep into certain, you know, various subtopics, you may not be covering it during your presentation, Spence. But one of the awesome things about these events that we can't overlook is the downtime, the in-between, the fireside chat, right?
Yeah.
Backyard walks, the backyard talks, and, you know, and who knows, all the other cool networking and people that we meet and that come out to these things. I mean, some of the most transformative and best info sharing happens during the downtime, too.
Yeah.
You know, and on Sunday, we're going to have, you know, we got a pretty loose, open-ended portion of the event that will be open for Q&A and to just jam with people. So we can, you know, we'll be able to kind of be flexible with it and go where the momentum is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then another thing, too, that I'll point out, the way we have it scheduled is so that on Monday there could be an optional thing for people who want to stick around. We were going to try and just go do a little simple hike at some awesome nature spot in the Gifford Pinchot. nothing, mm-hmm. nothing with clamp-ons. We're not going straight to the top of Mount Adams or anything, but just something to go get out in nature, do a little walk. You know, and maybe afterwards we'll continue with just jamming on this or whatever back at the ranch.
Great. So, yeah, it's always good to break that
out,
up. You know,
like that's it's just so it's so awesome, and so much of the good stuff happens during that downtime.
Yeah, I know. It's always good to break up when you're doing a lot of mental activity and things. It's always to break things up by getting out in nature and doing a little walk. And it seems like you come back at it and you're clearer, and things come together even much faster.
Absolutely, and that's you know part of the integration and part of the holistic approach of just you know, being able to integrate this into our lives.
Yeah. I notice a lot of times is just knowing the structure and knowing the game and walking with that knowledge. I mean, it's definitely a start. And a lot of times there's kind of like I don't know what it is. It's almost like a telepathic transference or an energy that when you do, when they know that you know, that a lot of times they just leave you alone. But, you know, most times you are tested. But a lot of times they just go, oh, I don't want to go there again. I was thinking, you know, when we went through our stuff, I don't know how many court cases we have. I lost track of them. But you know, they were saying, please don't come again. You know, does this mean we're done? You know, they didn't want to see us anymore because we really put them through so many hoops and so many. You know, they had to reevaluate everything, and it wasn't a rollover experience for them, you know. So what I noticed there was, like, it was kind of funny because they were going, and I think because of that, they're probably going, you know, I don't think I want to just open up that can of worms again. We're going to go find somewhere else we can play, you know, because this one was a little too hard, a little too rough for us, way too much work, and you know, we didn't get what we wanted out of it.
There's something too, and I don't want to emphasize this at all, but it's just an interesting secondary point is that those positions of control tend to be a magnet for folks that have a psychopathic tendencies.
Yeah.
And so one of the reasons I don't want to emphasize that is so that there's not that aspect and element of, well, that's why we can blame them, and that's why it's the way it is, because I would suggest that the reason the system is the way it is because the people have allowed it to happen.
Yeah.
But
well, yeah, I agree.
There's something to the mindset of the folks that want to be to be behind a badge and to be behind a gun. That does vary, and there is a spectrum, but there tends to be a magnet for some of the worst aspects as well.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, you get some of the higher masters talking about that, and they go, it's the height of ignorance to set yourself up, you know, as lord or king over another man. You know, they all the masters talk about that, you know, which is like, where are you going with that? But I do see whenever you create a position of power outside of self, there's always those who snatch that up and use it against you, you know, they'll move into that position and then use that against you for their own personal gain. And that, I think that is the whole process right now that we're undergoing on a large scale. Is we just have all these people that have moved into these positions of power, and they're very self-serving, and they either get off on the power over others, or they're using it to, usurp, you know, our rights and gain money or fame or whatever. You know, I don't know what they're doing, but it is, there's this weird mindset that goes in there. And what I found out is when you do counseling with a lot of these people is that they lost their power somewhere in life, their father, their mother, somebody, you know, there's a major abuse, and they're trying to regain their power through that position.
Hmm. Make up for lost time, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like a good example. I had a friend, I won't mention his name, but he, you know, he became a policeman basically, and he had some real issues with his mother. His mother was very, very controlling, you know, and very angry and things like that. And so he became a cop, and he just goes, I just love watching women cry. You know, I love giving them the big fat ticket and things like that. And I just went, I went, wow. And I saw a big revelation there. I go, wow, this guy is like getting even with his mother, you know, through the badge and through the ticket book.
Yeah. It's all kinds, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, there is a lot of that going on. And you know, there's other men in there trying to impress their father or trying to show how powerful they are in society and things like that. And it's all because somewhere down the line, they lost their power. It was taken away. They were abused or something, and they're just trying to get it back through those positions. Yeah, but anyway, let's go on back to the workshop. I don't know what kind of bag of worms Neil is going to pull out, but he always has some. I don't know if he's giving you any insights on what he's going to be talking about, but the main, could you talk about the main gist of the workshop is what's the end goal and you know, basically what the outline is?
Well, you know, people are going to be arriving Friday. We'll do, you know, sign in. If people are camping, set up a camp, you know, between noon and 6. We'll get started with a little, you know, just a meet and greet. It's like an hour long. Quick orientation Friday night, and then we'll do a sky watch, and just, you know, just generally kind of hang out and get everybody connected and meet everybody that's there. And then Saturday morning we'll get started, and I'm going to present, then Spencer's going to present, and then Kramer will present, and then that'll be presentations for Saturday. We're going to have some awesome food too. All organic and locally sourced. We're going to have some yak stew, actually, for that event as well. It's been raised off of the ranch and sustainably farmed. We had some of that at one of the last events, and it was pretty popular.
Yeah,
so we'll be doing that, and then Sunday, you know, like I said, Sunday will be kind of an open-ended group discussion and Q&A. Portion and you know, and then we'll wrap up again. We have food both of those days, and then on Monday, like I said, we'll have a little bit of time for some nature exploration.
Right.
So, like we said at the start, you know, we'll be delving into all sorts of different topics surrounding the pursuit, the sacred pursuit of freedom and self determination. And really looking into the questions of what is freedom? How do we know when we have it? How do we know when we don't? What do we do to gain more control over it? And how do we make changes to divest from unhealthy systems of control? And like I said, and how do we use some of the tools and techniques once we understand what the system is doing, what the empire is doing, what the control system is doing? How can we utilize those techniques to empower ourselves and to bring more harmony and more freedom into our lives?
Yeah, definitely. That would be a definite necessity right now, considering where things are going. And I noticed that, well, it's interesting. I just saw some things. There's a lot of legislation now on the books, and I'm not sure if it's going to pass or not, that is actually taking away power from certain agencies and things like that, and saying they're saying, hey, we're not going to give you all the gear, we're not going to turn you into a military police force, you know. And a lot of those are coming up on the books. So there are people, you know, in the legislative process that are seeing what's going on, that are making advances to stop the usurp of our rights and freedoms and things like that. So it's interesting seeing where this is going, but I think bottom line is it's up to the people. You know, I like one saying, I think there's an old saying that was attributed to Mother Mary, but she was saying, peace shall not come through religions and governments, but through the hearts and minds of the people. And I think it's the same thing with freedom, you know, and establishing heaven on earth again. It isn't going to come through organizations. It's going to come through the people.
Yeah. And, you know, just to give a little bit of context for what some of this is, because that's all sort of general concepts. Some specific ones are things like
people are prohibited in certain areas from collecting rainwater. You can only have 4 chickens in your yard. You can't have 5. You can't have a garden. There's stories of folks having gardens in their yard and getting raided by SWAT teams. So
yeah.
That mechanism, whether it's being enforced locally or not, the mechanism is in place. It's one type of mechanism. And so most folks either don't recognize it when they see it or they don't want to see it. But those are the specifics that might boil down and that kind of might assist in letting people see how, the obviousness of it.
Yeah. I know that non-GMO seeds, if you're hoarding or saving non-GMO seeds, I mean, you can be branded as a terrorist. And mm-hmm. there's some other things, legislations that are on the books that are coming up, and they're just total draconian. You know, you will eat these GMO corn. You will become sterile. You know, you will have kidney and liver failure and tumors all over your body, and you have no option. You know, so it's pretty draconian, this whole thing, and especially when you do the research concerning, you know, the effects of some of the things that they're forcing you to eat and to deal with.
Well, James, it might be a little worse than you even know, because here's how legislation works. Whenever they know that there is a piece of legislation, they being the legislature, knows that if they put in a piece of legislation that prohibits or commands some type of activity and that there's a fine associated with it if there's noncompliance, they now have a statistical ability to crunch those numbers that's fairly similar to what the insurance companies use to determine risk. And they can put that piece of legislature through and predict how many fines they're going to get and then flat out sell the rights to collect the fees to private companies like insurance companies and like banks. And so if they can anticipate that they're going to get a certain amount of revenue, let's just say off of people not wearing seatbelts or texting while they drive, they can sell the rights to collect those fees to an insurance company and get, let's just say, $5 million up front in order to do that. And so the legislature
wow.
has direct and immediate incentive to line their little empires with upfront money to put in prohibitive legislation. And so that stuff just runs wild when people have no idea what's going on and they think it's that they buy into the legitimacy or the sales pitch of the legislation, the propaganda behind it. Right? That's all we need is a little propaganda, and then they can go sell those legislation to.
It's like a derivative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. I know right there alone, you know, there's a conflict of interest because, you know, if the same organization is going to be enforcing that law that's gaining, you know, funding from that law or capitalized on that law, that alone right there should be a conflict of interest.
Oh, it is. But then now again, manner and agreement override the law, and so if the people put up with it, that's what they must want. You know, all we got to do is go watch TV, go watch football, and get loaded on beer every weekend and just go right back to sleep.
Yeah. Well, it seems like I was wondering, like, if you went in there, let's say you got a ticket for growing non-GMO seeds or having non-GMO seeds or whatever else, right there you could probably say, well, who would I injure? You know, where's your injured party?
Well,
you know,
maybe not. We might have
to
reel back farther and say, if you had a ticket for it, you consented to it. You've already. Now we're going to get real deep into this, but you've agreed to be to have those things enforced against you, and there's a contract somewhere. And so those type of contracts don't need an injured party. And so if you've agreed to be a citizen, if you have registered your land and handed it over to the state, you have said, I want to be subservient to you, and I'm giving you the legal title to my land. And so the problem is you've consented to all that.
Yeah.
And now they don't need an injured party. And so it's an interesting aspect that here's a crime without an injured party. That's how they've figured out a way around it, around the need for an injured party, is to harvest your consent.
Yeah.
And that's so hidden. Those are the kinds of things we're going to bring to light this weekend.
Yeah, and solutions, I guess, because I know by, you know, removing yourself, patenting the land, and things like that, you break all those old contracts, and you're right back to where, you know, you can go ahead and you know, retain that. Say, hey, I have no... Then you could say, hey, where's your contract? Where's the nexus? And also, where's, you know, where's the... Then you could say, where's the injured party, too? And I guess it... But you're still, you know, you're still at the whim of a very corrupt system. You know? So I guess you need to educate them as well.
Yeah, well, there's something to that.
What is that?
Well,
what's
mean,
that something?
So, you know, it's fairly understood with a lot of researchers that the max IQ that will be allowed for a police officer at the ground level is a max IQ of 104. And there was a guy that applied to be a policeman, and they flat out told him he tested too high on the IQ, and he sued and lost. But what that did is it brought that mechanism out into the public. And so in order to think that we're going to educate the folks in the system at that level, there is a built-in safeguard to make sure that that doesn't happen, that the folks behind the badge and the gun have a skill which is primarily follow orders,
mm-hmm.
do what you're told, and to like that thought process, and then don't be thinking for yourself. So
exactly.
I don't know that there's going to be too much hope in the near future of putting on seminars for the rank and file.
However,
I think there are some.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think there are some. I've seen people like come here. If you think about the ranch, you know, and you know, we've had NASA come here. We've had, you know, people with a lot of Boeing people are coming here and things like that, but. Yeah, they're getting educated about what's going on. They're figuring things out, and they're realizing that they're lied to, and they're also realizing they're building, you know, weapons and things like that they shouldn't be building. But little by little, they're starting to figure it out, and I think if enough of them start waking up, they're just going to have to walk away, you know, that from what they're doing and just realize, you know, this is not functional. It's not in the highest and best good of anybody, and I can't participate anymore in it, so... I think little by little they're coming here, you know, and they're checking things out. I had a guy here a while back was FBI, you know, he's with the FBI, really nice guy, and he brought all these kids out, you know, to watch, you know, the ships and things like that, and he's really into it. So I think it's getting infiltrated, you know, and there are the white hats on the inside. I'm just hoping they all start stepping forward real soon.
And ultimately, in our interactions with these people, If we are not so front-loaded with wanting to just blame them because, oh, they are a cop, or they work for this corporation, or he's a judge, he's got to be corrupt, you know. And maybe he is, maybe they are, but if we, you know, if our attitude was to change and our come from is a little different and we offer these people the chance to be honorable, you know, like, it sets a different trajectory and it sets a different tone, and that can be a key towards achieving a remedy, you know, having some sort of middle ground negotiation, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's just something that I've observed. You know, sure, there's bad apples, and sure, there's people that you won't be able to reason with, or that you wouldn't be able to talk to, or
yeah,
you know, or that it, but. But if we prejudge everybody and front load our minds for that, it's not necessarily a recipe for success.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting a little feedback on the phone. Hopefully, we can get that. I think it's our phone system here. We're probably touching on too many good subjects here. You know, somebody's hitting the button on us. But anyway, the. I know we've got a lot of events coming up here. You know, we've got the Freedom Technology. We've got the Ambassador Training on September 19th, and this one's on October. Freedom Technology or Freedom Divinity Empire Workshop is on the
October 5th, 2014, Trout Lake, Washington. And be sure and go to eSETIreservations@gmail.com to request an invite, you know, if you want to check out these conferences. And it's very important there to, you know, you can even call if you need to the house. But it's very important to realize that we are a private ranch, and we are, you know, having to take certain steps and measures because of some of the challenges that we've had. And what's been amazing is all the people that have helped us, especially Spencer and Nate, in setting up these boundaries. And there are sometimes you do have to set some boundaries and just say, hey, you know, enough's enough, you know. But anyway, I hope we're still hooked up. Are you guys still there?
Oh, yeah, we're still here.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're standing, Spencer was talking about this, and other people have said it before, but we're standing on the shoulders of giants and those that have come before us and have laid a foundation. And, you know, it's awesome. We've had not just Spencer, but other folks as well who've assisted us, and you know, the amazing synchronicities that have happened to get information or to get us in contact with the right people at the right time, and then to allow us to follow through on it and internalize it and make it our own, right?
Yeah. Hey, I've just been notified that we're out of time. We've got 1 minute left, and that's it. So, hey, I can't thank you guys enough for coming on the show. And people, don't forget about the Freedom Divinity Empire, October 4th and 5th. And go to eSETIReservations@gmail.com and to get an invite. And it's going to be an amazing event. But anyway, hey, you guys, thanks a lot for coming on the show. And hopefully we'll all be together soon.
Yep. All right, take care, brother.